Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Ellefson with the Digital Education Podcast. I'm always appreciative to have these conversations with innovators, educators, leaders, and today is no different. Privileged to have a conversation with Benjamin Thomas. Benjamin is the founder and CEO of Be to the World, a school leader of Kigali International Community School in Rwanda, which is a Be to the World project. He's originally a New Yorker and son of Indian immigrants. And right now, his sixth school year in Rwanda, he's raising four kids in Rwanda. Benjamin, it's amazing to have you with me. It's amazing to think that I'm in San Jose, California, and you're in Rwanda. But tell me, I mean, I guess just for context and for those people who are listening in, what is Be to the World? And how in the world did you find yourself in Rwanda?
Yeah. Well, thanks, Eric. And it's really a privilege to be with you. Thanks so much for the work that you're doing. And thanks for your encouragement along the way. As far as Be to the World in Rwanda, it's probably a journey that started back in 2011. I was serving as the global director, Global Leadership Council director of a ministry called Athletes in Action. And I was speaking at a student conference in South Korea. And there were just under 10,000 college students there, and they began praying for their brothers and sisters to the north. And in that moment, God did something on my heart where he was like, Ben, you're part of this large mission organization, and yet you don't have any clue as to the pains of the unreached. And so in that moment, that started birthing a desire in me to learn more about the unreached, and specifically the people of North Korea. And from there, a few months later, my wife was diagnosed with a malignant brain tumor. She was 14 weeks pregnant with our youngest. And Eric, it wasn't good. We arrived at the hospital and kind of the first doctor told me, Ben, you need to choose between your wife and your baby. And then as we figured out what was going on, she had a tumor the size of a baseball. Or for those in an international audience, the size a little larger than a cricket ball on the front right side of her brain. And our neurosurgeon said, you know, the baby's not going to survive surgery. And, you know, by God's grace, he was taking me through this period of just surrendering. And so what I needed that day in trusting him, he provided. And so when Susie woke up from surgery, she was alive. She recognized me and our baby was alive. And so I remember just giving God thanks that day. And I knew in those moments once as she was preparing for surgery that our life had changed. And I had asked God, I basically had said to God, God, teach us everything you want me to learn in this. Don't let me waste a thing. And so it was this season, Eric, of incredible learning, incredible pain and stress. Every decision felt like a life and death decision. I did resign my role with the organization I was with to focus on caring for Susie and our kids. We opted to wait on any further treatment until the baby was born. We were told that Susie's tumor was 100% recurrence rate with zero cure. Doctors were just kind of crying with us saying, hey, we're really sorry, but you know, probably she has 18 to 24 months at most until this tumor comes back, and then 9 to 18 months before she would eventually pass. And so we really just stepped into those moments living day by day, just trusting God for what we needed that day. And lo and behold, God had protected our little girl, Annie, through that time, and she was born perfectly at 39 weeks. And 2.5 weeks later, Susie started 2 months of radiation treatment with concurrent chemo. And then we had a 1 month break and then 6 months of chemo. And in that period, Susie said to me, Ben, I don't want to wait for this tumor to come back and just wait around to die, basically. So she said, what are the three countries you would want to move to? And I thought, man, Susie must be in denial. of what the reality is that she's facing. So I just thought, you know, I'd shock some life into her, into this reality. And I said, well, North Korea, Pakistan, or Brazil. And I said, those are my top three countries. And she said, well, it's settled then. We're moving to Brazil. And so we had made plans to move to Brazil, and but God redirected our steps. And in the middle of that, Susie had, she was mad that I resigned my role. And so she made me start a doctoral program. And so I started a doctoral program in global Christianity and development, where we studied the changes in global Christianity from 1910 to 2010. And we specifically studied the areas of mission, development, and global leadership. And so with that, we ended up launching into the Global South to the Kigali International Community School. There was a need for a director there, and my father-in-law, who was a Christian school administrator, had found out about this need and connected us, because our youngest son was born in Rwanda. And we ended up going, and everything about KIX made sense. It was a place to incorporate our ministry and our family. It was a place where I could further my doctoral research, and it was a place where I could be a global leader but minimize my travel. The only thing that didn't make sense about Kigali was it wasn't an unreached people group location. But I sensed God say, be patient, be patient. And so as I continued in the doctoral program while I was in Kigali, I came across this finding, this learning through the Center for Global Christianity that said 86% of Muslims, Buddhists, and Hindus do not have personal contact with a Christian. And I thought, oh my gosh, how can that be? I know, being a part of a large mission organization, that we've got really great strategies, really great people, and I know that we just represented a small part of the body of Christ. And yet, this was a true stat. Only 86% of the three world's largest religionist groups had personal contact with a Christian. And yet at our school in Kigali, we had daily contact with Muslims, Buddhists, and Hindus. Every day they were welcomed into our school. They were part of the KIX family. We were learning so much from them, and they were feeling loved and appreciated and part of the KIX family. They were learning as well. So God said to me, in a sense, Ben, you're part of the 14%. This model of school internet on the international stage can be a great platform, a great tool to provide a great resource of education, and at the same time be a great instrument for believers in Christ to be salt and light to those who do not yet believe. And so that started to percolate in my mind. And as I was finishing my doctoral, as I was finishing my dissertation, I really began to wrestle with what else is next, because I was really sensing that something else, that there was something more beyond just the doctorate. And so through that, in 2016, I connected with a mentor of mine, a dear brother named Dr. Bob Varney. And we would talk once a month, and he would say, tell me about what you're thinking about. And so I did, and was really trying to think of how to have a global impact, serve the unreached, serve in hard places. And he said, well, tell me more about KIX. And so I did, and went through these principles that we've learned at KIX along the way. And he said, well, what would it look like to replicate those principles in some way? And so we began to look at countries that are currently or recovering from war or conflict or devastation, and then countries that where Christians are not, or are being persecuted for their faith or unreached. And then third, countries that lack a quality level of primary and secondary education. And so really, Eric, through that process, it was probably about a 6.5-7 year process from the time in South Korea until December 2017, where we officially registered B to the World in the state of Virginia. And so that's how we launched Beat of the World. And there's lots of other stories in between there, lots of great people that have come alongside of us, a great team with a board and key volunteers. And but that was kind of the big picture. It was, how do you replicate these principles that make kicks great and try to bring those into other post-war, post-conflict areas, and specifically targeting areas that would mostly be considered unreached or persecuted in the Christian realm?
I think, Ben, you know, one of the things that I think about when I hear your story is the unique nature of it, the pain, the risk, the challenges that you overcome, the positive outcomes in so many ways. And then oftentimes we think about when we've been through something this painful, we go to, I mean, and I can talk about this from my perspective too, just because of my story and history, is we want to go to the easy, or we want to go to the comfortable, yeah, or we want to go to the places where it's like, you know what, I just need relief or rest or whatever. Yeah. You've actually gone the harder route. We're going to go into the most difficult situations. We're going to go into the most difficult places where people need education, they need schools, they need us the most.
It's
impressive to hear your story. It's impressive that you've made these decisions, and I know where it's coming from, because I definitely hear your heart. What's it like now as you take the Kigali principles, the work you're doing at Kigali, and what is it like when you start looking at other places in the world and saying, you know what, we're going to partner there to bring education and to bring, you know, the good work that we're doing here, there. Yeah. What are the things that, because the likelihood of some of this stuff succeeding is pretty small, but that's then right. It's also, hey, without the great, you know, risk, there's not the great reward.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, my, God's had me studying Joshua for the last 10 years almost. So the message in Joshua is clear: be strong and courageous. And that's such a, you know, as I look back on my life, as I look back on my parents and their story of immigrating to the U.S., as I look back on Susie's journey through cancer, and I look back on our Beat of the World journey so far, I would say it's been a calling to be strong and courageous. And so, people, you know, have people often, as we share the story, will say, why, Ben? Why do you keep picking harder things? And I don't know that I'm necessarily picking them, but I am a fairly practical person and think, gosh, you know, there's so many places that have great education, that have so many people that are willing to go. And yet when I think about the places in the world that, you know, living in Rwanda, you know, one of the biggest questions Rwandans have are, where was the world in 1994? When the genocide against the Tutsi was happening. And, you know, I'm guilty. I was an 11th grader and I didn't really know about it. And I certainly, if I did know about it, didn't pay much attention to it. So when I think about what's happening in Syria today, when I think about what's happening in Yemen today, it's the largest humanitarian crisis in our generation. When I think about countries like Iraq, when I think about North Korea, my mind certainly goes toward, and my heart goes to the people, but it specifically goes to the children. And no child chooses war. No child wakes up and says, you know what, let's go to war. Let's go through devastation. And so I just really think as a father, as a leader, as a husband, I just think if I were in that situation, I would hope that someone out there in the world was thinking about what's the best way to help us out of this situation? What's the best way to come alongside us? And I could think of nothing greater than education. You know, Nelson Mandela, a great hero here on the continent, said the most powerful weapon that you can use to change the world is education. And I really believe that, you know, education is that gift that keeps on giving. If we could develop lifelong learners, if we could develop students who have critical thinking and problem-solving skills, then I think, what a blessing. And so for us, for me, that's the motivation, is the opportunity to be a blessing to children and families and communities and countries recovering from war or devastation through a transformative education.
So Ben, I want to ask you, because you had a big event on campus last week where you brought global educators in from all over the place. Give me a little bit of context of who came and then what you actually, you know, kind of what you're working on, but what you learned from these people who are coming to you to spend this time with you.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Eric. Yeah, it's called our Global Educators Gathering. And honestly, Eric, I wish I could say, hey, I had this grand plan and this was the design, like it's working exactly as we thought it would. But it really just came out of a place of oftentimes when I'm asked to speak, I often speak on self-leadership, discipline, leadership of an organization. And as I was speaking at different events here in Kigali or Rwanda, some of the most basic things that I've just picked up because I'm the son of Indian immigrants, because of the ways my parents raised me, because of some of the great opportunities like CISA I get to be a part of, I just realized so many of the educational leaders I was coming across didn't have that same access. And so we put this together last year. Last year we had 11 educators from 8 different countries. This year we had over 20 from 7 different countries. And so they're coming to us. These are all educational leaders. So they either are school leaders, or they're leading a foundation that leads several schools, or they're leading an organization that leads several schools. So they're coming to us primarily from East Africa. So several from Rwanda, Uganda, Tanzania, Kenya, Democratic Republic of Congo. But then we've also expanded. We had a partner from Pakistan who was there this year, a friend and partner from Tunisia who also joined us. And so what we'll do is we'll bring in an experienced educational leader. Last year, it was Sharon Probst, who's the head of school at International Christian School of Vienna. And this year was Dr. Janet Nason, who serves as an educational consultant. And we'll partner with them. We'll really kind of see what their passion area is. And I'll do a few sessions and they'll do a few sessions. So this year, Dr. Nason really focused in on the heart of a school leader. And then she did a session on 21st century skills. And she also did sessions on child safety. And then I, you know, on my portion of the program as well, talked about the importance of vision and mission and values in the role of educators, and then professional development for us as educational leaders as well. So that's been great. And kind of the next iteration of it is we've prepared a sample curriculum of what it might look like for our friends in Burundi or Uganda or Congo or any of these countries to gather together educators that don't receive this type of professional development. And we're going to look to partner with them where Be to the World might provide experts in education like yourself or others to be able to come in and do the seminar. But our partners on the ground would do the organizing, would gather the educators themselves, the venues, and deal with those details. And so they would lend their expertise, and then we would bring our expertise. And so, you know, you ask the question of what do we learn? I mean, Eric, I learn so much every time. Like what these educators are able to do with the limited resources we have. I know every school leader feels like they don't have enough resources, but my goodness, I'm telling you, some of these dear brothers and sisters, we met this group from Congo. Eric, they have over 500 schools. Sorry, they have over 100 schools that that serve over 100,000 children with over 5,000 teachers. And I can guarantee you their budget is probably less than what most of the educational leaders who are listening to this podcast budget are for a single school. So I learned so much about resourcefulness. I learned a ton about strategy. And then I also learned how much it doesn't really matter if you're in a low-income school, a school in Congo, a school in Rwanda, or a school in America. The role of education is fairly similar. We're trying to equip students with critical thinking, with problem solving, with skills that they're going to need to be able to better themselves and their families. And, you know, that's, I would say, a common denominator across the board. So I find that regardless of who the audience is, the similarities we have are quite strong. And so it is really a great way to bring us together from a lot of different countries around the world.
So Ben, let me ask maybe one last question as we wrap up time, because it's amazing. You talk about resourcefulness, and it is that it's that conversation that we can simply have of what we can either view things as what we don't have access to, yeah, or the resources for, or, you know, we look at things that we actually see as opportunities, you know, opportunities to stretch budgets, opportunities to create partnerships, opportunities.
Yeah.
Like from a developmental perspective, you know, your work, because, you know, you kind of went there, you've been there 6 years now. You know, the people of Rwanda, you know, you talk about the genocide. I wonder, like, you know, the people of Rwanda, are they ready to kind of step into some of these places? What are you seeing from kind of that perspective? And then when you talk about a school in the Congo where, you know, there's, what, 100 schools with, you know, you said that many students, I think it was 100,000 students or whatever, yeah, it was. I mean, it's huge. It's amazing. Like, so what are you seeing? Maybe it's a developmental question that I don't even really, yep, know the question is,
sure,
but like, yep, you know, from that side, you went there to help and to provide education and to see this grow, and you're seeing it grow, you know, globally, and the opportunities in the difficult places. But what are you seeing, you know, growth wise and development wise in the place that you're at?
Yeah. Well, that's a great question, because Eric, I believe that I am living in maybe the strongest developing country in the world. There is not a month that goes by here where something stays the same. President Kagame, the president of Rwanda, and his leadership has been so strong here. I really feel like just by being here, I am growing as a leader, just by observing and being part of the fabric of Rwanda. You know, I'll give you a few examples. You know, every last Saturday of the month in this country is called Umuganda, where it is illegal to do any business on that Saturday morning. And instead, they organize by neighborhood and community, community projects that everybody in the community pitches in on together. I mean, are you kidding me? Where else does that happen in the world, right? Like, they're not waiting for handouts. They're doing the work. And so I've learned so many lessons like that, where they've set an audacious goal. It was called Vision 2020. And their number one goal, they started this in the year 2000. Their number one goal in education was to make sure that every primary and secondary student received an education. Well, now that as we've approached that 2020 goal, they've updated that goal for Vision 2050. And they've said, okay, now that we've reached this goal and children are being educated, well, now it's time to focus on the quality of education. So we want our education to be focused on critical thinking and problem solving. So it's absolutely amazing here, Eric. We learn so much. This is not our home country. And there's things that are quite different, and there's certainly times where we're very comfortable here, and we're very comfortable in the States. But gosh, I can't imagine being in a better place to learn, to grow, and a better place to take lessons from than the country of Rwanda. It's an absolutely beautiful place. You know, there's a hashtag, Remarkable Rwanda. And we absolutely agree with that. We believe in that. And it's exciting for us that Beat of the World, while supported in the States, is growing itself from here. And because it's being done here, it gives hope to other people. So when we have friends that visit and are considering starting a partnership with us, they're able to say, hey, my country's not as devastated as Rwanda was in 1994. Or my country has more resources than Rwanda does. So if it could happen here, if you could be part of such a great institution like KICS here, then that gives us hope for what we can do in our country as well. So I could talk on and on, Eric. I know we got to bring this to a close, but man, the lessons that we learn by living in Rwanda and being in Rwanda are absolutely immense. And we're so thankful for the opportunity to be here, to serve here, and to be a small part of the community here.
Ben, it's incredible to think about that. And I really appreciate, you know, your story on the front end, the faith that you've shown through that process, you know, the risk that you took, but I mean, just the amazing story of the people that you get to partner with and the encouragement that you get to be in bringing, you know, great education, to all kinds of different places. And so it's a privilege for me to have gotten to know you just bits and pieces as you've made trips to the United States, but to even hear your story more. So thanks, Ben. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Eric, and thanks for what you're doing. And it really is a joy to partner together. And now, just saying closing for those that are listening, unfortunately, the needs that are out there, we will never lack for opportunity. Unfortunately, there will always be war, there'll always be devastation. But you might be thinking, man, how can I help? How can I be a part? If you had a week to volunteer as an educational leader, to be part of our teaching faculty, please let us know. Reach out to us on beatoftheworld.com, and we'd love to partner. We're trying to really build a great network of educational leaders that could really serve as a blessing to countries recovering from war and devastation. So, Eric, thanks for the work you do, and thanks so much for having me on today.
Yeah, Ben, thanks so much. I look forward to getting this out there and sharing your story and sharing your work with more people.
Thank you so much.